Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now, on Last Call, NVIDIA shares just did something they have not done in 6 months, and it could spell more gains ahead. Oil game changer, a big warning from Iran, putting oil markets on edge. A new Boeing alleged whistleblower out with disturbing allegations, what it could mean for your next flight. $24 billion up in smoke. An audit of California's homelessness programs makes a discovery that every taxpayer needs to hear. 2024's kingmaker? Maybe. He's the secretive Wall Street billionaire looming over the election, maybe unlike any other we have. An exclusive report. Plus, a slam dunk buy. How women's basketball may have just turned into sports' hottest investment. All that and more over the hour. So belly up or buckle up. Last Call is up right now. Well, good evening here. Good afternoon out west, everybody. I am Brian Sullivan. All that and more coming up in the hour. But first up on Last Call tonight, here's the big question. Could we get another interest rate hike before we get an interest rate cut? Now, to be fair, the market is not saying that yet, but the market is pulling back on how many cuts they think we will get this year. Remember, back on March 8th, 1 month ago, even the commander-in-chief himself said, he bets you rates are going down.
Guess what? I can't guarantee it, but I bet you. I bet you those rates come down more because I bet you that that little outfit that sets interest rates, it's going to come down.
Now, since then, we've actually seen about a 7% rise in rates, and now the narrative is starting to change. A few days ago, Minneapolis Fed President Neel Kashkari said, we may not get any cuts at all this year.
In March, I had jotted down 2 rate cuts this year. Okay. If inflation continues to fall back towards our 2% target. But if we continue to see inflation moving sideways, then that would make me question whether we needed to do those rate cuts at all.
So a lot of ifs there and just one voice, of course, but it's a big voice. And the shift is happening because inflation is proving harder to defeat than we thought. In fact, it just might be reaccelerating because prices for many things are back on the rise. Look at these 3-month gains for much of things we use or need in commodities and inputs. In 3 months, gas up 32%, oil up 18%, coal, remember that, up 9%, pork via lean hog futures up 26%, orange juice up 20%, cocoa, it's up 150%. I mean, who could afford chocolate? And copper, which goes into almost everything, is up 14%. Those gains could certainly start to trickle through to the economy and your wallet. But do keep in mind there is also some good news. The rate of inflation continues to come down. Of course, that does not mean that prices are falling, but it does mean that the pace of price hikes is slowing down. Look at this. During peak lockdown, we were at 7 and 6.5% jumps in inflation over 2 years. That is the most in 40 years. Now, right now, the year-over-year price gains are just above 3%. That is still higher than pre-COVID, and it's higher than the Fed's inflation target, but the trend certainly has been better. So what is coming actually down in price? Well, not much. I mean, if you're in the market for a car, used car prices, which are actually a big part of the inflation data, they've been coming down off record highs, but still remain stupidly elevated. Cell phone costs apparently are falling a little bit in February, according to the federal government. But outside of those things, what do you think? Are you, all of you out there watching and listening, are you seeing many things that are coming down in price? We aren't on our team. But either way, we're going to find out tomorrow morning, because that is when the key CPI, Consumer Price Index, is out. It is expected to cool once again, but really only cool if you strip out food and energy costs. And we have been told by those people in the know that those things are kind of important to human life. So let's talk about it more. With us tonight is KKM Financial founder and CEO Jeff Kilberg, also a CNBC contributor, and Piper Sandler chief market technician Craig Johnson. He'll look at the market aspect of this as well. Guys, welcome back. Jeff, you were there the night we got the I betcha. We got, you know, rates have kind of, I betcha they've gone up since then. Doesn't mean they will continue. What, though, are you expecting from tomorrow's CPI? Because I just showed all those, and you're a former commodity, current commodity guy. I just showed all those prices that are re-accelerating.
I think we get a hotter than expected number, Sully. And to your point, I wasn't a mathematician at University of Notre Dame, but we are seeing an acceleration. In February, the CPI was 3.2. Tomorrow, the expectations are 3.4. So that is not an outlier. It's just acceleration of core inflation. So we're going to have to see once they strip out food and energy. But to your point, I think it's an outlandish statement back in January. If you would have said we are going to see rate hikes this year, everyone was expecting 6 rate cuts, maybe 3. Now we're down to 2, maybe 1. So that question that you proposed earlier is going to be contingent upon that CPI number tomorrow. But I actually think we're going to see an acceleration, because if you remember back in November, Sully, the stock market was 25% lower. Now we have $10 trillion more of valuation to play with, more CapEx. Consumers are feeling stronger. So there's a little bit of a variable here. So I think we're actually going to see a surprise uptick in inflation.
You know, listen, Craig, you've been more right than you've been wrong. But all of Wall Street, there is not one woman or man out there that is right 100% of the time. And strategists, they make their expectations about rates and where they might go. They are allowed to change them. And they have been changing them. Let's take a look at this, right? We are seeing the expectation, to Jeff's point, we were kind of in that mostly the average guess was 3 rate cuts. Now we continue to reduce the expectations for that. Where do you see inflation and interest rates going over the next 6 to 12 months?
Well, Sully, as you know, I'm a pictures kind of guy. I like to look at a lot of the charts, and I think the charts tell us a lot about what's happening with inflation right now, and also sort of what the expectations are from the bond market. If you just take a look at 10-year bond yields at this point in time, they're starting to trend higher, and they have been making a very simple series of higher highs and higher lows. I think this is going to be a very fascinating interest CPI print tomorrow, because if we start seeing 10-year bond yields working their way up toward 4.5, I don't think equity markets are going to be real happy. And I think if you start to see even a push closer to that 5%, which again, it's not my forecast, but if these CPI numbers are hotter than expected, then the 10-year bond yield is going to respond. And at that point in time, equity markets are going to come in and they're going to pull back. And I think you're going to see fewer rate cuts coming into play. Right now, it's about 2.5 rate cuts is what's priced in. And again, that's still maybe too high.
Yeah, 2.5. And to Jeff's point, and Jeff, respond to yourself, I guess, which is if you're right, it comes in hotter. We could see that 2.5, and I know there's no such thing as a half, but you get the point. It's right. Sort of all the estimates that are aggregated up go to 2 or 1.5. And do you agree that the market won't like that? Or has the market already expected that, and that's why rates have gone up and NVIDIA has fallen?
I don't think the market has expected nor priced that in. But Craig brings up a great point, and I always look to the bond market for leadership. And Craig talked about the 10-year going up to 4.5% or 5% being problematic. I think the problem is already here at 4.36 in the 10-year note. With the 10-year note, with expectations, it was supposed to be down at 3.5% by now in Q2 of 2024. And here we are. I think there's a lag effect. There's a disconnect. We had uber sensitivity to the bond market, equity markets I'm talking about, the way equity is related and correlated to the bond market. But now, with the 10-year note elevated, we haven't seen stocks slow down. So I think there is an opportunity for the S&P 500 to pull back, to Craig's point. I see 4950 on the chart. I'm not going to step on any charts. That's Craig's world. But at the end of the day, it seems a little overvalued up here, Sully. Maybe CPI is that catalyst to get things repriced, which would be healthy for all market participants.
Let's end it, Craig, on an optimistic note, all right?
Sure.
We had an eclipse yesterday. Everybody's happy. It's Tuesday, the worst day of the week. What if we get a cooler than expected CPI number? Do we then go back to that 3, maybe 4 rate cut story? Does tomorrow matter that much?
Oh, I absolutely think tomorrow matters that much. And I think if you get a cooler than expected sort of core number out there, but again, everybody's eating and everybody is certainly driving and these things matter. But if the number's cooler than expected, yeah, the market's certainly going to lift and those rate cut expectations certainly could come back up. But don't forget about the CRB index, Brian. You've got a big breakout happening there, and that's a lot of energy, that's a lot of food, that's a lot of copper. All these things are breaking out. And again, all these pictures suggest to me, putting it all together, not to be doom and gloom, that inflation's probably going to be hotter than people expect. And Joe Biden will certainly lose this bet.
Yeah, well, the CRB and gold, by the way, outperforming the S&P 500 this year. We got to just move the show to the Midwest, right? We got Minneapolis Craig, we got Chicago Jeff. We're listening to Minneapolis Cash Car. What are we doing sitting here? Let's move the show to Chicago. We'll go to Gibson's after it's over. Shaw's Crab House. Everything will be great. Guys, really appreciate it. Thank you both very much.
See you, Sully.
All right, let's take a look at what happened to your money today. Not much in the macro markets. I think people are waiting for that CPI number tomorrow. But inside the market, the big winner of the day, Moderna. New data showing its cancer vaccine could treat more than just melanoma. Very, very good news there. The Hartford Financial down almost 4%. No real news. Maybe just some profit taking. All right. Up next here on Last Call, from slump to funk, NVIDIA shares doing what few thought possible. They're going down. But could that mean more gains ahead? We'll explain that riddle. Plus, Boeing rocked again. A new player out with some disturbing claims. Should you or passengers or investors be worried? We'll hit the Boeing story coming up.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, heads up, because one of Wall Street's hottest stocks has gone ice cold lately. That is NVIDIA. You might have heard about them. They make, like, semiconductors. NVIDIA is now in a technical correction. It's down 10% or more from its closing high. The last time NVIDIA entered correction was back in October. But since then, the stock made many of you a lot of money. In other words, it fell, got a correction, boom, buyers came in, it soared, it printed money, now it's down 10%. Question is, will that history repeat itself? Let's talk about it with Gene Munster, Deepwater Asset Management. Gene, yes, we can say NVIDIA and correction in the same sentence. Probably goes to our previous segment there on rates. Either way, are you a buyer of NVIDIA with this decline?
Well, from our flagship Titan fund, we're currently not a buyer, looking for opportunities kind of on a pullback, which we believe will happen going into their printing the quarter. Just to put some more context, all the numbers that you just went through, check out with my exact same numbers. It wasn't until October of last year till we saw that correction. But it did get close before they reported their January quarter. The 2 weeks before they reported, stock traded off just about 9%. And then, of course, traded off in the aftermarkets on the print and then is up about 57% in the past 3 months. And so we've seen the kind of that whipsaw like you talked about. At the end of the day, the central question is, do you believe? Do you believe that AI is going to be as transformative as many, myself included, think? And if the answer is that you think that this can be bigger than the internet, bigger than the PC, internet PC combined, then it's highly likely this company continues to grow faster for longer. over the next 2 to 5 years.
Very quickly, though, what appears to be happening, though, is that people are selling NVIDIA and buying stock in the boring old energy companies that will actually make the electricity to make those data centers happen. Energy's soaring.
Correct. And energy is going to get a nice bid here. I think that that is one of the unsolved pieces here. But keep in mind, when you think about the chips, NVIDIA still has multi-year lead. We know this. Our venture business, we're investing in companies that are trying to compete with them. It is extremely difficult. And you think about the phases of AI. Yes, energy is important, but there's the inference phase that we're in right now. We'll get into the application, then the heavy industry, and ultimately the sovereign states. And so this, again, I think this is multi-years, and NVIDIA is going to grow faster for longer.
Well, it ain't everybody going down, because you've got Google's dad, Alphabet. They rolled out a new AI chip. That stock's been on fire. Amazon closing in on its record close once again. It appears that maybe, and Tesla, we know what they've done, it feels like the Magnificent Seven is having like a family feud. They used to go everywhere together, and now they're all kind of going in their own direction.
Sure. Yeah, definitely a breakup in the near term. I think that they ultimately will unite in the year to come here, too. And I just want to mention something I think that is important in terms of how we think about the world relative to the segment before, and talk about the macro and the CPI. And if the number's hot, the market's going down. But ultimately, if you think about this scale between interest rates and the potential production gains, profitability gains, margin expansion related to AI, I think that the latter far outweighs the former. And so I was hiding under a desk when rates were going up, and it was hard to invest. And now I'm much more comfortable just given that I believe in the fundamentals of this paradigm shift.
We were hiding under a desk a couple days ago because we had an earthquake, but that was a whole different thing. Gene Munster, Deepwater Asset Management. We're waiting on everybody's waiting on that CPI number, 8:30 a.m. Eastern.
Can't wait.
Yeah. Well, we can. It's about 12 hours from now. Gene, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go to bed tonight, folks. It's going to be okay. All right. In the meantime, the FAA investigating new claims from an alleged Boeing whistleblower, raising concerns about the quality of the 787, known as the Dreamliner. Sam Salipour, an engineer with Boeing for more than a decade, alleges in a New York Times piece, and again, these are allegations, that sections of the fuselage on the 787 are, quote, improperly fastened and could break apart mid-flight after thousands of trips. Salipour also says he was repeatedly retaliated against for trying to raise some of these issues to management. In response to these big claims, and they are big, Boeing says, quote, we are fully confident in the 787 Dreamliner. These claims about structural integrity of the 787 are inaccurate and do not represent the comprehensive work Boeing has done to ensure the quality and long-term safety of the aircraft. They go on to say, quote, the issues raised have been subject to rigorous engineering examination under FAA oversight, and that retaliation is strictly prohibited at Boeing. This, though, not the first problem for the 787. Last year, Boeing did temporarily halt 787 deliveries after notifying the FAA that it was conducting, quote, additional analysis on a fuselage component. At that time, they also reiterated there was no safety concern. Salipour is set to testify on Capitol Hill next week in a hearing entitled Examining Boeing's Broken Safety Culture. Not exactly a leading title there, is it? Shares of Boeing down almost 2% today. Let's bring in American Airlines pilot and Allied Pilots Association spokesman, Dennis Tager. He has voiced concern in the past about Boeing planes. Captain Tager, good to have you back on. Would you fly a 787 right now?
Well, yeah, I would fly on it as a passenger, but this—
I was just in one. Didn't even think about it.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, simply put, what a mess. And it just keeps rolling in. Now, surely this is going to be investigated. Boeing is denying it. Some of those statements that they made, it's kind of like just the classic thing that Boeing says. And normally that would work. But see, the trust at Boeing from the operator side and even passenger side and a regulator is at an all-time low. So we're going to find out what happened. The FAA has definitely said they're going to be there. They're going to live in the house and find out what's happening. You know, airplanes are not like IKEA furniture. You can't just press them to fit and then jam in a securing bolt. If this is what happens on this very delicate, I shouldn't say delicate, but precisely engineered composite material and you didn't analyze whether that would impact it,
yeah,
then we've got a problem. You know, I know you cover the street on this. I mean, we've got 30% drop since the door blew off the Alaska flight, some $40 billion of market cap. You know, this leadership team, I know they just announced there are going to be some changes, that Calhoun's going to leave at the end of the year. It just seems like when they're reaching the surface to breathe some air, they just go right back under because they're wearing cement shoes.
Listen, I want to be clear, too. These are allegations. The term whistleblower, by the way, can be a hot button tie. You call somebody a whistleblower, it sort of implies credit and authority, right? That they're coming forward with the truth. A lot of whistleblowers are found to be frauds or they're just not. So I want to be careful, right? We don't have any idea. Boeing denies it. This gentleman says it. We'll let other people figure that out. But to your point, you got this Capitol Hill thing on Boeing's broken safety culture. What does Boeing need to do? I mean, I don't want to put this all on David Calhoun either, because there were plenty of problems. And Boeing went through a litany of CEOs prior to David, who, by the way, I do know, because they had all kinds of different issues with management, affairs, and all kinds of stuff.
You nailed it. It's like a bad reality TV show. This issue at Boeing is decades in the making, and it's going to take more than a news cycle or a few quarters to straighten it out. It's certainly going to take different people. But this is so ingrained and so rooted into the Boeing tree that it's just going to take a lot of time. And, you know, I'm bringing in recycled. I know there's great fanfare over GE's way of doing business back in the Jack Welch days. But, you know, GE's starting to mean good enough. And we don't know who needs to be there to get this done. But this good old boys network, sans agenda of recycling people, is just not the answer. And whistleblowers, by the way, you're right that sometimes, you know, you've got to find out if it's true or not. But with Boeing, we found time and time again that the allegations are backed up by data and are true. Yeah. Now, we're going to find out on this one, but benefit of the doubt is starting to run a little bit thin here with Boeing.
Yeah, and we will find out. I just want to make, whenever the word whistleblower comes out, it kind of adds this thing. I want to make sure that we let the process play. Still, the stock has sold off, a lot of concerns and a lot of very clear videos about tires falling off and engine cowlings. That could have been a maintenance issue. But Captain Dennis Tasier, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Still ahead, a new threat from Iran that has oil markets listening up. We're going to tell you what Iran said that needs to be on your radar next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Oh, a couple weeks of peace is over because now House lawmakers have returned to Capitol Hill. And they are kicking off yet another battle over a multi-billion dollar aid package for Ukraine, potentially stifling billions in funding for U.S. defense companies. Emily Wilkins went to one of these companies, and she joins us now from upstate New York. Emily.
Hey, Brian. Well, you know, in D.C., the debate about Ukraine funding is often about Ukraine, but it's actually U.S. companies like this L3Harris one in Rochester that's making tactical communication radios that have seen a bulk of the funding. Of the $113 billion that Congress has passed, 61% have stayed with U.S. companies. But the uncertainty as to whether Congress is going to pass additional funding is impacting the defense supply chain. L3Harris, president for communication systems, Sam Mehta, told me he gets calls all the time from the 470 suppliers to this facility, and they're trying to figure out how to hire, whether to let go, whether to expand capital, and a lot of those decisions are going to depend on how Congress acts. Listen to what he told me today.
we have a significant amount of urgency. You know, we're delivering out a lot of the last radios from the last supplemental bill. And so this new bill becomes very important for us and even more important for our supply base.
Now the House is back in session, and Speaker Mike Johnson has said it is a priority for him to try and find a way to get this Ukraine funding done. But that's going to be difficult with the politics and the fact that a lot of House Republicans don't want to see any additional funding. Brian?
You know, Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, he's got to make this palatable to House Republicans, to your point. I mean, it's got to be agreed to by pretty much everybody. How do you do that?
So Johnson's got a couple different ideas here. Number one is giving the aid, but giving it as a loan. The other one is an act that's been out, a bill that's been out there for a while that would basically take Russian assets that were seized by the U.S. and use that funding to support Ukraine. There's also been discussion about adding conservative priorities to this legislation, like lifting that temporary pause on LNG exports. But we're going to get a lot more clarity now that lawmakers are actually back in D.C. and they can get into rooms with each other and chat on exactly what that's going to look like. And we're kind of expecting this plan to develop over this week, maybe into next week. But we did hear a Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell call on Mike Johnson today, and he said, hey, look, Senate's already passed that $60 billion bill. Johnson needs to put that on the floor and give it a vote.
Emily Wilkins, Rochester, New York. Emily, appreciate it. Thank you. Meantime, tensions continue to simmer hot in the Middle East. Iran's naval chief now calling Israel's presence in the UAE a threat, flexing Iran's ability to close the Strait of Hormuz should the country be provoked. Now, the Strait of Hormuz, I'm sure you've heard of it, but you don't maybe realize how important it is. It sits just south of Iran. It is arguably the world's most important oil choke point. Roughly 20% of global petroleum liquids, gas, oil, chemicals, move through that waterway. That waterway, by the way, is narrow and mainly controlled by Iran. If Iran acts on this threat, and it may not, but if it does, how much would it impact oil prices? Let's try to find out. Rapidan Energy Group President Bob McNally rejoins us, and let's hope they don't do anything, Bob, but we have seen Iran do things like harass tankers, lay mines, try to spook traffic, even go after ships themselves and confiscate them and kidnap the crew. What's your base case here?
Hi, Brian. Our base case is Iran is still going to be cautious. It doesn't want to get into a shooting war with the United States of America because it knows it will lose. But that IRGC naval commander, Tang Siri, his message today was really to President Biden. It was basically restrain Israel. Because the issue here is that Israel's a changed country after 10/7. And they're not only going to address their security needs in Gaza, they're going to look to Hezbollah and Iran. And so Iran knows its only leverage over Israel is really with the United States, because Iran can guarantee an election loss for President Biden. Iran can send pump prices to $6 or higher. They can do that. And Biden knows they can do that. So this, I read today's threat, and it was a threat. I don't think it's completely bluffing, but
they threaten a lot, Iran. I mean,
they do.
Right. That's what they do. They make some threats. They give some money to Houthis, who send some missiles and ships. But there is a lot more saber rattling than actual sabers, I think, when it comes to Iran. But listen, Israel's a sovereign nation. They're going to do what they want. The White House can pressure Netanyahu. He's kind of said, I'm going to do what I want. Is there anybody that can pressure Iran in that way? I mean, Saudi Arabia, maybe?
Oh, I don't think so. They're getting along just barely now, but no.
But they are getting along, and they normalize relations. Yeah. I know, right. I'm on a kind of a flyer here.
Yeah, no, they are. And Iran wants to get along with UAE and Azerbaijan and Saudi Arabia. They don't want to tip things over. Look, Iran and the United States, in some ways, or the Biden administration, want the same thing. They want this to go away. The problem is, their problem is, Israel's not letting this go away. And let's not forget, Iran talks a lot. They also attacked Abqaiq on September 14th, 2019, largest open ever in crude markets that Sunday night. Now, fortunately, they inflicted light and reversible language. But Iran occasionally acts over the Christmas holidays. Brian, you may recall, they attacked with a drone an oil tanker off of India that had left Saudi Arabia. Pentagon came in and accused them of that. So Iran doesn't want a war. But Iran is credibly threatening, as he said today. If we can't export, you can't export.
I don't know why they want to go after the White House. Let's be clear. It's sanctions. They're printing money, Iran. Their oil exports are way up. Why would they want to harass the White House?
I think they want the White House to lean on Israel to stop the escalation. That's what they want. They want to tell Israel, don't you dare go into Lebanon and push Hezbollah north of Litani and stop provoking Iran by escalating, attacking their embassies, and God knows what come next. Iran wants the United States to choke back the Israelis. That's what's going on here, I believe.
Tens billions more in foreign currency reserves from oil sales. We'll see. Bob McNally, great insight and analysis as always. All right, coming up, he may be the most important mega donor of the election, and you may know nothing about him, but you will after this. All right, 2024 election is heating up, and campaign finance is now becoming front and center, and one major billionaire power player is pumping millions into causes that he likes. That billionaire is Jeff Yass. He's the founder of trading firm Susquehanna, and he is donating mega sums to groups that are pushing policies that some believe would benefit him and his business. Yass is a major stakeholder in TikTok parent ByteDance. His net worth is more than $40 billion, according to Bloomberg. That's according to its latest financial disclosure. And Yass's firm also owns more than 600,000 shares of DJT, or Trump Media stock. Maybe because they got a hedge against it. Who knows? But what does this mean for the race? Joining us now is CNBC.com political finance reporter Brian Schwartz, who's got a big feature out on CNBC.com about who exactly Jeff Yass is. Yass? Yass? Potato? Potato?
In a way, you know, Yass really has put himself on the map here, Sully. He's become the number one political donor so far this cycle, giving north of $40 million to federal causes and efforts to support mainly Republicans at this point. And you know, our reporting really gets into that before he got to this point, him and his allies were, you know, working at least two nonprofits that we know of to finance a variety of outside groups that, you know, when you look at them, they're just pushing causes and policies that could help him and Susquehanna itself. So while, you know, Yass has kind of put himself on the map over this last year or so, behind the scenes, over the years, he's been pumping money, and him and his allies really have been pumping money into a variety of causes that could end up benefiting him at the end of the day.
But I saw your reporting. It's a great story. Right as of now, though, Yass is not donated money directly to the former president, correct? There's things around the margin, Cato Institute, some libertarian causes, but not directly to the man himself.
Well, and that's a great point, but I wanted to go a step further here. So he has said, there was an op-ed, I believe it was published in the Wall Street Journal yesterday, where he said in the last graph of this that he does not plan to donate to Donald Trump's campaign. But you and I both know there are other ways to support a candidate for president. Now, I'll take a step back for a second. He's given millions of dollars this cycle to a group called Club for Growth, who has made nice with Donald Trump. This is also a group that has opposed a TikTok ban. So before this group endorsed Trump, you know, Yass gave them a ton of money, millions of dollars, north of $15 million. There is no indication yet that Jeff Yass is not going to give that PAC any more money, even as it says it is going to help Donald Trump take on Joe Biden. So we're really going to have to see where Yass's money ends up. Yes, it's probably not going to go directly to the campaign, but there are other groups that could help Donald Trump with potentially Yass's money.
Yeah, former poker player from SUNY Binghamton turned one of the world's or America's richest men. Brian Schwartz, big feature out on CNBC.com right now. Check it out. Brian, thank you.
Thanks, Ollie.
All right, let's get now to our quicker than the ticker of the best of the rest of the headlines.
Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. Norfolk Southern settling several class action lawsuits over the 2023 East Palestine, Ohio train derailment for $600 million. The accident spilling hazardous chemicals into the community. The settlement still needs to be approved by a court. Call it Costco's Golden Touch. Wells Fargo releasing new estimates that sales of 24-karat gold bars at Costco are bringing in as much as $200 million a month. A massive payday of a different kind. Barstool Sports founder Dave Portnoy cashing in $2.76 million after UConn's championship win last night over Purdue. Call this another solar eclipse RBI. Internet traffic dropped as much as 60% in states along the path of the totality during the time of the eclipse. That according to Cloudflare, apparently everybody just got outside. a private island for gaming? A UAE-based esports company called True Gamers is planning to build one in Abu Dhabi. The project could reportedly be worth $1 billion when it's done, and we're done. All right, last call, returning right after this short break.
All right, welcome back. A shocking new study out of California did an audit of tens of billions in spending to fight homelessness, and what it found should make you angry, especially if you are a California taxpayer. Top line, the audit found that billions may have been mismanaged and that the state has not been able to identify if the billions actually worked to help homelessness because in some cases they did not track the outcomes. Well, just from the data, it appears that those billions haven't done much to counter the homelessness epidemic in the Golden State, because despite all the spending, homelessness is on the rise in California. And of course, it all leads to the eventual question. If it's not working, what happened to the money? Well, there was two state senators who both requested the audit on this, a bipartisan team. Let's bring in one of those, and that is State Senator Roger Niello. Senator Niello, thanks for joining us. I read the audit. It's disturbing at best. What's the required action here to fix this?
Well, first of all, I found the audit a bit underwhelming because it didn't address some things that I think are very important. But obviously, there are serious problems of transparency and accountability. And that is very troubling because we have spent over $20 billion in 4 or 5 years. And of course, the problem has gotten worse, which is why we asked for the audit. But the audit itself kind of more focused on shelter and housing issues, which are certainly very important. But we also asked for an audit of services, provision of services. And while housing is certainly important in the continuum, the fact of the matter is that homeless programs should be pointed toward getting people out of homelessness and on to self-sufficiency. In other words, for many of them, mm-hmm. addressing very issues that caused them to go homeless. And there isn't much about that in the audit, so I'm a little disappointed. But well, you're right, it is outrageous, and we really need to do something for transparency and accountability.
Yeah, and I would back up and say I agree with you on the audit, Senator. I mean, I was just in San Francisco, I was just in L.A., and you just passed the eyeball test. You drive under I-10 and under many of the underpasses, you see communities, people living. You want to fix something, you want to help these folks. This is tens of billions of dollars. And the one thing I did take away from the audit was that, can you imagine, by the way, Senator, if a company said, here's $20 billion, I don't care if you have any data to see if it worked, there's the money. That, to me, was how the state was operating. There was no follow-up on where the money was actually going and if it was working.
Well, in terms of the approach of the effort to homelessness itself, in my opinion, the problem is that we have had a top-down approach to homeless programs. The governor took this over as his issue when he was elected and developed over 30 programs, all but one of which are top-down, they're state-mandated programs. And, mm-hmm. you know, historically, counties have always been the health and human services providers in the state of California, and they've been sort of relegated to do whatever the state tells them to. And that's, I think, a good deal why things are ineffective and also why they're not properly reported on.
Yeah, let's now bring in your colleague on the Democratic side, that is State Senator Dave Cortese, Senator. We wanted to get you both on at the same time, some technical stuff, so I'm glad you were able to join us. And I'm glad there's a bipartisan effort on this. I don't know what you could have heard from our conversation, Senator, but what is your takeaway on this audit, and what needs to be done to A, help homelessness, and B, make sure taxpayer money is not wasted, because the money's going somewhere?
Question. Yeah, I ordered up the audit last year. I represent the San Jose area in the South Bay area, the San Francisco Bay area. After touring a very large homeless encampment, one of the largest in the state of California, that is. And going back to the city of San Jose at the time to ask them how they were deploying state dollars, state appropriations. They didn't have a clear answer. They didn't have a clear audit trail. And that led me to surmising that that might be the case in cities up and down the state of California. I requested the audit. I volunteered San Jose as one of the sample cities. The other city was selected by the auditor himself, San Diego. And what we determined and learned this morning as the audit was released, that the big problem that we have is the tracking of these dollars, not because there's fraud. The auditor didn't determine anything like that. But there's a great difficulty because of the balkanized approach to how those dollars are appropriated at the state level and then reappropriated by the cities and counties and then pushed out to nonprofit organizations in determining the effectiveness of outcomes. And obviously we can see whether it's the governor's frustration or the two senators you have on this interview were frustrated by the lack of outcomes. Yeah. We've seen homelessness grow over the last 5 years. We're happy to have an audit now that gives us a blueprint in terms of what we do need to do going forward. And a lot of it has to do with data transparency and making sure that we're really measuring effectiveness.
It's a starting point, and we're glad there's a bipartisan effort. Both of you, I commend it, and maybe the audit will spur some change. Thank you both very much. Take care. All right, coming up, maybe premium hospitality ain't what it used to be. A glaring example from the Masters. Next. Time now for your Tuesday RBI, and today we're talking about sports of a different kind. That is golf and the Masters. The tournament tees off this week, and outside of the links and the winner's jacket, the tournament also makes a lot of green. According to sports business analyst Joe Pompliano, the Masters set to make $70 million in merchandise sales this week. So based on when the stores are open, that's about $10 million a day, $1 million an hour, or $277 every second. And then there is this. Augusta National is debuting a new premium hospitality venue this year. There it is, called Map and Flag. They've got high-end food and beverages, an outdoor garden, and a merchandise shop. Kind of looks like my food court at college. A weekly pass costs $17,000 a person. Of course, they're sold out. But here's the thing. That club, Map and Flag, isn't even at the course. Now, it does include a tournament badge, but that club is about a 7 to 10 minute walk away from one of the gates to the course. I mean, early reviews, they're good, but wow. Apparently the Masters, a tradition and business unlike any other, random but interesting. For more, let's bring in Joe Pompliano, investor at Pomp Investments and sports and business analyst. I want to get to the women's NCAA ratings against the men, which is an amazing story, Joe. But the Masters, listen, they're cheap. They don't charge for the you know, pimento sandwiches. There's a lot of things they keep down. 17 grand a person and you're not even on the course?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's so different from everything else they did. Like you said, they don't charge nearly as much as they could for tickets. They give away the media rights essentially for free. And many people estimate they leave somewhere between $100 to $150 million on the table every year by maintaining control and exclusivity over the tournament. But what we've seen now is that allows them to do things like this. That location of that shop is actually in a shopping center that they bought for $26 million a few years ago. So they bought the entire shopping center, they renovated it, now they have this store, this cafeteria there, and they're gonna have people attending the venue for $17,000 per person. It's absolutely mind-blowing, the pricing power that Augusta has built up over the last few decades.
Yeah, I mean, it does come with a tournament badge, so there's value there. It looks very lovely, the reviews are good. You could also, if you want to just drink and eat and buy a shirt, I don't know, go to Applebee's and spend $100. This is all about exclusivity.
Yeah, you can make it make sense in your head if you really want to, right? Yeah. You get a 7-day pass into the tournament. That's probably a grand to a couple grand a day. You get food, drinks, all that other kind of stuff. But I would argue there's probably a better way to do it, whether you just go to the tournament for a couple days and maybe save yourself 10 or 15 grand along the way.
Okay, ratings. Men's final was a good game for the first half. 14.5 million people watched UConn pretty much dominate Purdue to win the back-to-back championships. But the men's ratings were 4 million viewers less than the women's final. And women's ratings have been on the upswing for years. This is a big deal, Joe.
It's a massive deal. And look, we could talk about what went into this. Some people are talking about how the women's game was on broadcast television on ABC and the men's was on cable. We could talk about how the men's game started at 9:20 on the East Coast and the women's started at 3 p.m. And all of that plays into the ratings a little bit, but it hasn't really mattered in the past, right? And I think ultimately my biggest takeaway from this is two things. Number one, stars, and two, storylines matter more than anything else in sports. The women's game had it this year and the men's didn't. And that's what made the difference.
Yeah, I mean, you do wonder, Caitlin Clark was such a powerhouse. USC was undefeated. So there was sort of an extraordinary storyline there as well. But we've got this chart, there we go, thank you, of the ratings for women coming up. Do you think that's going to continue? Or maybe does the men's game have a problem?
I think the men's game will probably stay kind of where it is, flat over the next few years. The real question is what's going to happen to the women's game, right? And as you mentioned, the storylines were absolutely fantastic this year. If you think about Iowa specifically, who we all know, right? They're all tuning in to watch Caitlin Clark. They played LSU, who was a rematch from last year's national championship. Then they played UConn, her versus Paige Bueker. She wanted to go to UConn, didn't get an offer. Great storyline. Then them versus USC, South Carolina, an undefeated team. Again, another amazing storyline. So it kind of lined up perfectly where everything was building and building and building. And with the final on ABC, it really went off. Now, the question is, does this maintain its value with Caitlin Clark going to the WNBA? My guess is we probably won't see another record next year, but do we see a viewership jump from the previous year? And maybe that's something that we should be looking at instead.
Yeah, and many of the men's regular tournament games did well outperform, but the finals, the title goes to the women's game. Joe Pompliano, big story there. Maybe I won't see you at the $17,000 person Map and Flag Club. Joe, thank you. I probably just got my invitation rescinded. Folks, you're always invited to tune in to Last Call, and we'll see you again tomorrow night. No entry fee. Shark Tank is next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.